This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
The world doesn't need another sports show. It needs an awesome sports show. You're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Good morning, Naz. Good morning, Wally. The boys are back. Let's talk sports.
Good morning and welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. I'm your host, Walter Rigabon. As usual with me, my co-host, Naz Marchese. Good morning, Naz. How are you?
Good, Wally. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks so much. Realized I haven't seen you in the flesh in a long time, and thinking about it, we haven't been in studio since, I guess, March, the best of my recollection. And I tell you what I miss, Naz. I miss seeing you show up Sunday mornings with your Bruce Smith sweater on. I miss seeing you show up with your Leaf and your Alabama proud wear of all your Alabama sweaters and hoodies and all that stuff. We've been doing this COVID thing since March. You're doing it out of your home. I'm doing it out of mine. I miss the studio, I got to tell you, and would love with the success of the Buffalo Bills this year, would love to see you in the flesh in your Bruce Smith jersey on. So you know what, Naz, take a picture of it and post it on social media. I gotta see you wearing your proud number 78.
I have my Blue Jay pants on right now. That's funny.
Yeah, I mean it's been an interesting year. Once again, we always give thanks. Things are a bit tough out there right now. We're in the second, third wave of this thing, or whatever you want to call it. We still have to be careful. We've got to wear a mask. I think it's the appropriate thing to do. We've got to socially distance. We've got to be socially responsible. And we've got to give thanks to those people that are in the front lines, our essential care workers, who are fighting the good fight in our hospitals, and first responders, and all those people who are out there providing services and to a certain extent putting themselves at risk for the rest of us. So we'd be remiss if we didn't give thanks. Naz, I know you want to do the same thing. Naz, just to let our listeners know, today coming up on the show, the CFL's actually caught a little bit of the sports pages because they are announced their schedule. We didn't get a chance to talk much about the CFL this year. They canceled the season, and they sort of disappeared from everybody's radar screen. No Grey Cup. Sad day in Canada when you can't have a... sad year in Canada when you can't have a Grey Cup. So many parts of Canada, the Grey Cup is an institution that certainly to miss it this year, noticeable. University football, no Western Mustangs. Didn't even get to watch my beloved York, used to be called the York Yeomen. I guess they're the York Lions now. Didn't get to watch them lose a few games. University football didn't happen this year. I presume high school football didn't happen. We're going to get a chance to talk to Peter Martin. Peter, former Toronto Argonaut, former Western Mustang, and a commentator. He's a commentator and broadcaster for so many years, doing 1977 to 2010. Peter's doing well. And caught up with them the other day. So let's talk some CFL football. Let's talk some university football. Let's talk some high school football. And maybe we'll even get a chance to talk about the 1971 Argos. Never get an opportunity to talk to Pete Martin or Joe Theismann. If we get a chance to talk to those characters, why not? Middle of the hour, Al Strachan, Satellite Hot Stove, controversial figure. He was on Satellite Hot Stove, had strong opinions, great journalist, member of the Hockey Hall of Fame, great stories, could use them in today's world, certainly held everybody to account, all the ownership and the general managers, and wasn't scared to speak his mind, and more often than not, in fact, almost 100% of the time, he always seemed to be right. He got his certainly did his homework. Journalists from the old school, they're thrilled to talk to Al Strachan. Naz, the Buffalo Bills. We are headed
to Monday night in San Francisco.
Yeah, the interesting part about this game, if I'm not mistaken, we're playing. When I say we, I'm a Bills fan too. Naz and I don't pretend that we're not fans of any particular team. We're fans of the Bills, always have been. My Bills fans started back in the Jack Kemp days, back in the 60s when the Bills won an AFC championship. I think it was 1964, if I'm not mistaken, and then we had some great years in the early 90s. Naz, I think they're playing San Francisco, but I think they're headed back to Arizona. I don't think the Niners are allowed to play. I think Santa Clara County or whatever it's called there has shut down all contact sports. So they're playing tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken. Are they not, Naz?
Yeah, they're playing tomorrow, yeah.
And hopefully we don't get the result in Arizona that we got the last time. With the
they just have to learn how to cover the Hail Mary. That happened to them last week, too. Unbelievable.
Yeah, the Bills didn't look... I mean, they won last week against the Chargers, but as you pointed out, they didn't look that great. They weren't, they played the Chargers. That, I follow your social media posts religiously. You made the observation you didn't think the LA Chargers coach did a great job, but the Bills.
Oh my God, brutal!
Yeah, tell us a little bit. You didn't think the Bills looked that great last Sunday, Naz?
No, they didn't look good at all. I thought they didn't play well. The Chargers outplayed them, really, and lost the game.
So the Bills are going to have to bring a bit of a better game this Sunday. I guess it's tomorrow night, if I'm not mistaken. Looks like they're going to be in a little bit of a dogfight with the Dolphins to see who wins the AFC East. And then they're headed to... would seem that I wouldn't call them a lock for a playoff spot, but they seem to be headed in that direction. The odds are certainly in their favor. But they got a big game coming in the really, really near future. The undefeated Pittsburgh Steelers. Steelers, all the Steeler fans in Southern Ontario, man, I've never seen them so excited. 11-0. Great start for the Steelers. They're up against the Washington football team, as they're called nowadays. Steelers have that great Canadian kid, Chase Claypool. Bills, if they're going to go anywhere in the playoffs, Naz is keeping their fingers crossed that they, in fact, do make the playoffs. Look like they might butt heads against the Steelers or the Chiefs or the Titans or the Ravens, for that matter.
Their first-round matchup is... Cleveland, Wally, if the state is the same right now. There's an extra wild card team going in this year. So it looks like Cleveland and Buffalo in the first round.
Well, that's an interesting matchup for the Bills. That's certainly a better matchup than the Chiefs or the Steelers. And I think the key to that, though, is the Bills have to finish first overall in the AFC East and not go in as a wild card. So they've got to buckle down, and they got the Steelers, I think, coming the weekend after next. That's going to be a tough one. San Francisco out in Arizona is probably going to be a tough one. They've really got to buckle down. They got to play better than they played last Sunday.
Yeah, they certainly do. They certainly do. The team I don't want to play is Tennessee with Derrick Henry at running back. My God, that guy is impossible to stop. I wouldn't want to play that team.
Well, he's like an irresistible force out there, man. He's, I read a comparison, and, I think it was Steve Simmons is watching Derrick Henry in the fourth quarter. It was like bringing back memories of Jim Brown. I don't know if I'd go that far just yet. Jim Brown, perhaps, if not the greatest player ever to play in the NFL, certainly in the conversation. But those are pretty high expectations. Yeah, if I was a cornerback or a linebacker, I don't know if I want to stick my head down and want to tackle that guy, man. He is, he's something else. If I'm not mistaken, he's one of your graduates from Alabama, is he not? Yeah, certainly. Since we're on the topic of college football, 2 minutes before we go to break, Alabama looked pretty overpowering. I mean, I'm watching them beat the crap out of LSU. First half, I'm looking at some of these stats, running stats and everything else on it, and I'm looking at it. And they're playing in Death Valley as well, which is LSU's home territory. I said, there'd have to be, I think the earth would have to spin on its axis for Alabama not to go all the way. I mean, I'm thrilled that my Fighting Irish are number two in the nation. Not a great performance against a really bad Syracuse team yesterday, but they did. You do what you have to do to win. It wasn't a fantastic win, but it's a win, and they're undefeated, and they're headed in a matchup against Clemson on December 19th in the ACC championship game. So the four top teams in Alabama's got, I guess they got Florida coming up in their rearview mirror. Do they not, Ness?
Yes, they do. They're 10-0 there.
You see anything there that suggests that Florida will give Alabama a challenge?
I don't think they'll be within 20 points of Alabama. But Notre Dame's legit, Wally. They're better than they were 6 years ago when they went to the final.
This may be whatever happens against Clemson, this is the best Notre Dame team. I think they're better than the team that got shellacked by Alabama in the college football final. It was 2012, if I'm not mistaken, and better than the team that got beat up by Clemson a few years back. This may be the best Notre Dame team in, over 20 years, close to probably since the early 90s. Better balanced team. Ian Book has raised his game, but Naz, I'm thrilled to death that Notre Dame has restored a bit of its glory, but I just don't see them in the same class as Alabama. But anything can happen, upsets can happen. Anyways, on that note, we're going to go to break, and we'll be right back with Peter Martin.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville realised we all have things we should cut back on. For me half-brother Raoul, that's ordering inflatable toys. For others, it's carbs. So Pizzaville made the extra thin crust pizza. You get the same authentic Italian taste as our regular pizza, but with 2/3 less carbs. Because the last thing Raoul wants is an inflatable waste.
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian. Authentically Italian.
There's an old saying, entrepreneurship doesn't build character, it reveals character. Entrepreneurs learn to trust a person by trusting people. The law firm Rigabon Carley understands this. They know all about entrepreneurs because they work for them. Every day, they've earned their trust. They know that when it comes to meeting the legal and business needs of entrepreneurs, good enough is not enough. Rigabon Carley, the intelligent choice.
This is Daryl Sittler for Alta Infinity and Vaughn. I've worked with some pretty great teams over the years, and the staff at Alta ranks among the very best. Expert sales, superior service, and the largest selection of Infinity cars and SUVs in Canada, and the most competitive pricing anywhere. It's no wonder that Alta has been an all-star performer for well over a decade. Visit AltaInfinityWoodbridge.com, or better yet, drop by the number 7 Auto Mall at the corner of Martin Grove and Highway 7. Experience the difference that makes Alta Infinity the captain's choice.
Here's to every boy who thought his Bobby Orr rookie card sounded great in the spokes of his bicycle. His only served to make yours in mint condition more valuable. And now it's payday. Mint Inc. Trading Cards and Sports Merchandise wants to buy your vintage collection of hockey, baseball, basketball, football, and soccer heroes. Now's the time to cash in while the hobby reaches new heights. If you got them, we need them. Mint Inc. Trading Cards and Sports Merchandise. Visit our store online at mintink.ca.
They never argue sports. They just explain while they're always correct. The boys are back. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live on the new AM 740. Also in Toronto, 96.7 FM. Live streaming on the internet, www.zoomerradio.com. sportshow.ca. I'm thrilled to welcome back to the Nazzawoli Sports Hour former Toronto Argonaut, former Western Mustang, former Winston Churchill graduate, high school in Scarborough. I don't know the nickname. I'll ask that question. Of course, we're talking about Peter Martin. Peter was also a commentator and broadcaster for Toronto Argos from 1977 to 2010. When I think of the Toronto Argos, the name Peter Martin is one of the first that comes to mind. Peter, good morning. How are you, sir?
Well, yeah, I'm fine. I know I just heard the your last commercial there, and I'm looking at the Toronto Star here, and I've been kicking myself in the butt for not keeping my Opeachy gum cards.
Should have kept them.
You know, I remember the days in high school and elementary school, you'd get your cards and you'd go out and you'd flip them, like you'd flip them up and down and come home with a pile of them, and you ended up losing them. And now you look at this guy here, he's going to get $1 million for a Wayne Gretzky card, right? And I'll let you know, I think my bubble gum card's worth about $4.50, right?
Well, it might be worth it. You know what? I think that all those guys that were members of the 1971 Argos, one of the greatest teams ever, I think all you guys might be worth a little bit more than $4.50. Peter, thanks so much. I just satisfy my curiosity. I know you're an Argo. I know you're a Western Mustang. You went to high school, played high school football at the Sir Winston Churchill in Scarborough. What was the nickname of that team?
I'm sorry. What was it?
What was the nickname of the Winston Churchill High School?
We were the Bulldogs. Oh, you can imagine the Bulldog, Winston Churchill, the Bulldog.
Oh, of course.
And our colors were purple and white because our head coach Jerry Fitzgerald was a Western guy, right? So we had to wear purple and white. And I was a student there when the school opened in 1954. All right, so I would have been in the first graduating class, but I took an extra year, right?
We won't get into the details of why, Peter. Probably you're playing too much high school football. Peter, the CFL was off the radar screen for most of the year. They had to cancel their season. University football canceled their season. High school football, from what I understand, canceled their season.
Yep.
No Grey Cup, no Vanier Cup. You bleed Canadian football more than probably anybody I know in this country. You've lived it, worked it, done it at every level in every capacity.
Mm-hmm.
How do you react to that? How'd that the whole concept of no Canadian football for an entire year, lack of a Grey Cup? Your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, you have to do what you have to do. I mean, we're just a victim of circumstances here, and you know, you have to pay the price to try to get over, you know, the tragedy that we're going through right now. You know, I think, you know, at the professional level, you know, I think it'll come back. The Argos could be tenuous in the fact that they're, you know, they were having difficulty, you know, getting people to come to the games prior to the pandemic. And we'll see if a year or two off the radar is going to create some hurdles, some big hurdles for them to try to get back. You get the support back. But you know what? The people I feel sorry for and have empathy for are the young people, all right, who are not able to play football at this time or hockey, whatever it is. And I think back to, and you know, when you were in high school, I mean, how important athletics were to the overall school picture. And I feel sorry for the young players who are at that point where they're, you know, maybe their last year or their second last year, they're good players. They're looking to, you know, showcase their skills so they can get athletic scholarships and so on. And you look at the young players that are at university level that are not playing and are potential draft picks, and they're losing a year of football. So there are a lot of stories out there and a lot of people being affected by the lack of football, not just the people who can't go and watch the games.
Naz?
Peter, what did the Argos do to get started here, get them back on the page?
I'm sorry, I missed that question.
What did the Argos do to get back on the page when the new season starts?
Well, you know, the issue, I think, it is that there seems to be a lack of interest in a way in football in general in Canada, or in particularly in Southern Ontario. Maybe the younger people are not playing football. There's not as many kids playing football as there were before. You go to college games, and a lot of the students aren't attending college games and so on. So there seems to be, you know, a generally lack of interest in the sport. I think that, you know, I could be wrong on this, but sometimes going to a football game is a social event, right? And it's an opportunity for people to get together, go to the pub, have a couple of beers, and jump in the car or whatever on a bus and go to the game. And it's a social activity. And I think back to, you know, when I was playing and when they were getting bigger crowds and big crowds at C&E, the old C&E. That's what it was. It was a big party. It was a party. And somehow or other, they're going to have to get that feeling back, that you go to the game, you know, to have a good time. You go to socialize. You don't go by yourself or necessarily take your wife. You go with your buddies. You go with some friends and family, whatever, and make it a social event. Somehow or other, they're going to have to convince people it's a good way to spend your money to go out, be entertained, and have a good time.
Peter, you know, you sort of touched upon it briefly, how important is not just high school, it's not just football, it's athletics in general, and how important, you know, I don't know how much it is for this generation. I suspect it's just as important as it was, but certainly when we grew up, Naz and I go back. We played high school football together in West End, North York. We get together and have reunions of our high school, and we have a blast. And you know, used to look forward to going back to school in September, so we could put on. We weren't purple and white; we were black, red, and white. And it was such. And then it was not just football; it was the basketball team, it was the volleyball team, and it wasn't just the guys; it was the women too. They had their sports, and it was such an important part of growing up. It was, and you know, you had mentors like you know the high school football coach or the volleyball coach was such an important person, and it's such a difficult time in people's lives. I feel to a certain extent, I feel sorry for this generation. Comment from that perspective, because you were, you know, you're a high school football coach as well. You were, you know, you became a high school teacher. You had to mentor kids, and you know how vulnerable they are at that age. Just the loss of that from your perspective and your experience.
Yeah, and you know, I taught high school for 32 years in education, and taught football and so on, coached football and a phys ed at Port Credit. Over the years, Wally, I noticed the role of the high school changed. Right? When we went to high school, you know, Churchill was your academic center of your life. It was your social center of your life. It was the athletic center of your life. If you wanted to play basketball, you had to play at the school. If you wanted to play football, you had to play at the school. You know, they had school dances and so on, and it was a major part. The schools have lost a lot of that, have lost that now. It to me, it seems, and over time, it just became more of a place where you went to school, and as soon as school was over, you just took off and went to your part-time job or found something else through social media or whatever to do. And it's really kind of, and also from an athletic point of view, you can get a lot of the sports now outside the school. Right? Like, you don't have to go to high school to play basketball. You don't have to go to high school to play hockey. I mean, there's community football programs where a kid can go and play football if he wants to without having to go through the high school team. So, you know, you're seeing programs at the high school level that are being dropped. I mean, the number of schools that don't have football it's amazing. I mean, when we went to school, Wally, everybody had football. I mean, every school had football. It was mandated almost that you have to have a football team. In fact, Churchill, we weren't that big of a school, 1,200, 1,400 kids. We had three football teams, a senior, junior, and a bantam team. And now a lot of schools can't even field one team. And the issue in some cases is the fact that they can't find anybody to coach.
Yes.
How has this affected a city like Saskatchewan football, not having football?
Pete? I don't know if you picked that. I'll doing this remotely sometimes it presents its challenges. I'll
How is the lack of football? I mean, we're in Toronto, and we see it from one perspective. Mm-hmm. How would it affect a community like Saskatchewan, the province, where it's such a bigger part of their lives out there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't think that's happening all across Canada. What I just talked about in Toronto, but I think when you go to a smaller town or a smaller community, there's not as many opportunities for kids outside the school, right? So the school still has, you know, is a center of community activity, right? It's sort of a rallying point for everybody. I mean, you have all these stories, like in the U.S., small town, you know, Friday night football, right? How important the football team, the high school team, is to a community. And I still think that, you know, parts of Canada, that still applies. But it doesn't apply here in metropolitan Toronto. I don't think a lot of people don't really care if they have football, right? Because it's really not an important part of the fabric of the school.
Yeah, certainly. It's things have changed from that perspective over the years. I mean, we remember we used to have rallies before our high school football games, where we'd have bleachers full of full of kids, and we'd be in the dressing room. We'd go out in our full gear. The cheerleaders would be there, and yeah. it's like a different world compared to the way it is now.
The other thing too that's entered the picture too, Wally, that is the fact that I think a lot of parents are concerned about the safety of their kids too, right? And if you think back to if you played football, your kids would play football, right? Because you knew the game and so on and so forth. You had a good time. It was valuable to you, and you would encourage your kids to play football. The fewer people that are playing football now is going to lead to fewer people playing football down the road. Like, if you don't play, then you're not going to promote it with your kids. So that creates a problem. But there's no doubt that I think parents worry about the safety. That's another concern, and rightly so. And the thing is, too, that to try to make the game safer, they've made the game more expensive to play. I mean, the expense to put for the schools to the expense to put a football team on the field, it's astronomical how much they have to pay for helmets and so on. They all have to be certified and so on and so forth, and that scares a lot of people away if there's not that much interest in the sport to begin with. That are they going to spend the money to try to get all purchase all the equipment to put a team on the field?
And we're talking to Peter Martin. Peter, we only got a couple of minutes, and then we've got to let you go. And we'd be remiss without we've got you on the phone. Naz and I just chatted about it really briefly, but we'd be remiss if we didn't get an opportunity to talk about the 1971 Argos. Certainly, I think Joe Theismann, I think, probably captured that. I think he had a quote or whatever. It was a whole bunch of characters with a lot of character. That's probably a good. I mean, you had some interesting people on that team, accomplished in a lot of ways, pushed the envelope in a lot of ways. You had PhDs, you had guys who dressed up in mm-hmm. fur coats. What an incredible team! But for Dick Thornton not cutting one way, not going the other way, and not being a slippery field, and Leon McQuay, you guys would have been Grey Cup champions.
It'll be debated forever, won't it?
Oh, I know, but that's the beauty of sports. That was certainly an incredible season. You were a big part of it. I don't even know how to ask you a question on that. Your thoughts, anything you want to say about the 1971 Argos?
Well, it was brought back on the weekend, right? The Grey Cup weekend. They showed that documentary again, right? The greatest team that never won was on TSN, and I've got a copy of it in the basement. And every once in a while, I go and turn it on. And you know, I think back to that time, and it really was kind of an unbelievable situation. You know, I started in '65 when the team was was terrible, right? When Bob Shaw was here, and then when Leo came in 67, and the gradual building of the team, and Leo with the love, who loved the characters, and not only were their characters, they were great players, and adding a piece here and a piece there, and you know, by 71, you know, we got to the pinnacle when we really had a shot at winning the whole thing, and it was great to be part of that, you know, to see a football team kind of get better, and the people jumped on the bandwagon, and how excited everybody was about football again in Toronto after a long dry spell. And the thing was, I guess, we were kind of like Donald Trump in a way. I guess everybody thought we were going to win. Right? There was no doubt that we were going to win the game, right? Because we'd handled Calgary, we played them during the season, and we beat them quite handily in Toronto, and went out there, and I think a lot of people thought that it was a foregone conclusion that we were going to win the game, but you know, it didn't work that way. But I think I've said this before. The biggest disappointment for me was the fact that I don't have a Grey Cup ring, and everyone, you get a chance to get a Grey Cup ring, you got to grab the opportunity, you know, to do that. And we didn't. We had our chance, and they blame Leon's fumble, but I tell you, there are a lot of other things that went on in that game. You can't pin it on Leon. You can't pin it on Leon necessarily. And the thing was that, you know, we came home from that, and everybody said, oh, next year, don't worry, you're going to win it next year. Well, if you remember, we didn't even make the playoffs the next year, right? We didn't even make the playoffs. And I retired, that was my last year. So I just sort of have that feeling of, boy, we really let it get away. We had a chance. We had that chance. And I guess the lesson is that, you know, when you get an opportunity, you'd better grab it, because it may not come around again. Right?
Well, we'll see. You may not have a ring, Peter, but you occupy a place in so many people's memories with a lot of fondness. I think people remember the 1970, certainly in a lot of places, remember the 1971 Argos, probably a lot more than the 1971 Stampeders. So you made your mark, and you left us with that particular team, and the whole Leo Cahill era is talked about forever. Yeah, amongst Toronto Argo fans of our generation. Peter, I gotta wrap it up. I apologize. I've got to let you go. I want to thank you so much for joining us. We want to wish you the best. I wish you continued good health, and hopefully we chat again soon.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Always fun.
Peter Martin. We'll be right back with Al Strachan.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville announced the Medium Gourmet Pizza Special. Get a medium gourmet pizza for just $13.99. That's like flying first class when you only paid economy. You're up front, sipping champagne and stretching out in your luxuriously wide berth. Instead of having somebody kick the back of your seat, then the guy in front of you decides to recline his seat.
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian. Authentically Italian.
Here's to every boy who thought his Bobby Orr rookie card sounded great in the spokes of his bicycle. His only served to make yours in mint condition more valuable. And now it's payday. Mint Inc. Trading Cards and Sports Merchandise wants to buy your vintage collection of hockey, baseball, basketball, football, and soccer heroes. Now's the time to cash in while the hobby reaches new heights. If you got them, we need them. Mint Inc. Trading Cards and Sports Merchandise. Visit our store online at mintink.ca.
There's an old saying, entrepreneurship doesn't build character, it reveals character. Entrepreneurs learn to trust a person by trusting people. The law firm Rigabon Carly understands this. They know all about entrepreneurs because they work for them. Every day, they've earned their trust. They know that when it comes to meeting the legal and business needs of entrepreneurs, good enough is not enough. Rigabon Carly, the intelligent choice.
Are you real ready? If you're a real estate agent, we can help you sell more homes. A business owner? We'll help show it off to the community at large. And if you're a homeowner, we'll supply accurate floor plans for every room in your home. Because selling property is all in the details. Real Tours Media, creators of 3D virtual tours, walkthrough video, HDR photography, logos, and brands. Check out the one-stop shop for successful real estate agents. RealToursMedia.ca.
They're not here to be nice. They're here to be right. The boys are back. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. I'm your host, Walter Rigabon. As usual with me, my co-host, Naz Marchese. The book is Hockey's Hot Stove, Untold Stories of the Original Insiders, written by Al Strachan. Al, you will recall, panelist on Satellite Hot Stove on Hockey Night in Canada, columnist at the Montreal Gazette, the Globe and Mail, the Toronto Sun, and a member of the Hockey Hall of Fame. Good morning, Al. Welcome to Zoomer Radio. It's a pleasure to have you.
It's nice to be here on a Sunday morning.
Thank you so much. My guess is we'd much prefer being where you are, but we won't reach that confidence.
Yeah, I'm just looking out at the HT and thinking I'd go out there myself a little later. It's nice down here.
Anyways, Al, thanks so much for joining us. As I mentioned, you've just written a book. It's called Hockey's Hot Stove, The Untold Stories of the Original Insiders. It's Simon & Schuster. Question I often ask when we interview, Naz and I have been around almost as long as you have. We certainly recall most, if not of all, your career. The book, Al, why the book and why now?
There's a lot of interest in it, strangely enough. Both Eric Bahacek and Scott Morrison and Pierre Lebrun and people like that who were on the show and who I still communicate with have been saying, you know, people still come up to us and say, gee, we wish Hot Stove was back on and we remember the good times and it was our favorite show and on. So Simon & Schuster suggested that I do a book about it, and they said, Kevin, the president said, we don't want just another sports book, you know, just a recitation of facts. We really want you to put yourself in it and sort of tell your own story at the same time. And it's going to be different than your standard sports book. And do you think you can do that? So I'll do it if I can get the cooperation of John Shannon, because John was so instrumental in this, and it was his brainchild to begin with, and then he nurtured it into becoming what it did become. And I said, if John will cooperate, because I would need a great deal of cooperation from him to do it, then I'll do it. So I called John, and I was pretty sure he would, and of course he did. And if you read the book, you'll see that there's a lot of John in it and what he did and how that show came about and how it became so popular.
Naz?
Al, you were a beat writer for both Montreal and Toronto. Where was the toughest place to play of the two, and coach?
Oof. Montreal. At Montreal, first of all, you had to speak French, which I think is really pretty stupid, but they're still sticking with it today. And then, you know, you're picking when you want another coach or you want another general manager, you're picking from a very small pool. And as a result, you end up having people like Réjean Houle and so on in your package, and Mario Tremblay coaching and stuff like that. And then they're nice people. I knew them well when I covered that great team in the 70s. But that doesn't mean that they are management material or coaching material, but you can only pick people who speak French. And there have been instances in recent years when they had an opportunity to get a good coach, but he didn't speak French. And so that makes it tougher to begin with. And then once you're there, then of course there is that French-English aspect all the time. You're forever on a tightrope if it's perceived by some people that you are favoring the English over the French or whatever. And usually I don't think the fans really care too much about that. I think that's mostly a media thing. But of course, the people in power do get involved with the media. They read and hear what's going on, and they have to respond to it. And then, of course, like anywhere else, they want a winner. And in Montreal's case, which makes it significantly different from Toronto, is that in most people's lifetimes, they've been a winner. Whereas that's not the case in Toronto. But they're both difficult. But I think pretty well any of the Canadian cities is a tough place to coach or play.
We're talking Al Strachan. Al, we remember Satellite Hot Stove fondly because
You know, it's funny when I got when Zoom calls became all the rage in this COVID era. I said, I think I've seen this somewhere before. It was like satellite hot stove was the precursor to Zoom calls.
It was innovative though in those days. I mean, people don't quite realize, perhaps some of the younger people, that was the first when John Shannon got the idea of putting four boxes up on the screen at the same time. You see it everywhere now, and you can even do it yourself, as you say, with Zoom. But you couldn't do it back then, and nobody had ever done it before. And it was a remarkable technological feat to do it and to get the cooperation of everybody and to get all those feeds lined up and put them on the same screen at the same time. And people were impressed just by that, not mentioning what was being said at the time.
Yeah, the satellite hot stove... And interesting, you guys were on after the second period,
right.
And Cherry and Coach's Corner were on after the first period,
right?
And then John, and we actually had the privilege of interviewing John Shannon for an hour earlier this year, and he, you know, he's obviously an important part of this book, and you've done a great. And I read the book, got an opportunity to give it a good read. He's obviously I don't know if I want to word the word genius, but he's certainly a broadcasting genius, is he not?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, for every 4 years for a while there, when the Olympics wanted somebody to put their world feed together, they came to John. They could have gone anywhere in the world, obviously, and they came to John and got him to do it. And then what we see today is still thanks to John. Before John, there was one game starting at 8 o'clock, and that was it. It was John who had the idea to put two games on. One starts at 7 in the East and the other one at 10 in the West, and you piggyback them. And that was really why he brought hot stove into it, because that was part of an overall concept. They didn't have just the one idea and go for it. It was the overall concept that you've got a first period, then you've got Don Cherry, people are going to watch that. Then they'll watch the second period. Maybe they might start to wonder a bit in the second period, but if you can put together a really good second period show, they'll wait for that. And that was the idea. And then they did that, and then people stick around for the third period and then go right from that first game to the second game as quickly as possible, maybe cemented with a quick hit from Don in the middle if you have to, and then go right to that next game. So now you've got pretty well guaranteed people who start to watch will watch at least four periods of hockey and then maybe go on from there. So the hot stove was one of the links that held it all together, and it was John's baby.
Yes.
Now, what was the biggest story you broke on the show?
I don't know, on the hot stove? Well, there were a number of them. The last one, the last day I worked there, I said that they were working on moving the Atlanta Thrashers to Winnipeg. That was my last show. I had, of course, the mention of the Gretzky trade, that he was going to be traded to St. Louis, and I don't know if I mentioned Pronger leaving Edmonton at one point. I got a lot of abuse in Edmonton for that one, and not too many people bothered to correct their Twitter remarks afterwards, I noticed. So I don't know. There were quite a number of them, but probably the Gretzky one had the biggest impact. The moving the Thrasher certainly had a big impact in Winnipeg.
Al, you took a lot of criticism during your career from those in power, a lot of whom didn't like what you wrote or didn't like what you said on Satellite Hot Stove.
Yep.
Probably because you were saying the truth most of the time, and they didn't like hearing the truth.
No.
And that's what I enjoy. I tell you, I enjoyed your book because it's not a flaw. You know, you haven't changed. You're not scared to be critical. And you're critical of quite a few people. You're not a big fan of Brian Burke. I'm not so sure I want to get into that because we both may end up in court, as you suggest.
Yeah, he's very litigious, yeah.
We'll be careful what you say about him.
Very.
The CBC, let's go there. You don't have, the CBC is a cultural institution in this country, has been for basically since its inception, I believe, in the 1930s.
Yeah.
And they had some incredibly valuable sports properties,
right,
including Hockey Night. And you don't have, I mean, you're, I think you try to be fair with your criticism. Sure. The CBC, satellite hotstove ended, your tenure there ended. What would you say about the CBC?
Well, it became politicized. I mean, just the fact that John left, as soon as John left, then of course I was going to be in trouble because John had me there to stir things up a little bit. And as long as I was accurate in what I said, and I was always accurate in that I said what I had been told, some of these things did not come to pass. You might say a given team is trying to get so-and-so, and then everybody gets upset because they look, it didn't happen. He said he was going to be traded. And I didn't say he was going to be traded. I said they were trying to get him. And that happens a lot in hockey. And there are a lot of the cases like that where people would get upset. But John said that he had about one letter a year where somebody said we were actually wrong, really wrong in what we said. So you can manage that. But John stood up for me because people, as you say, got upset. And because there were, I said things that they didn't want made public. You know, Pierre Lacroix would stand in an elevator beside me and not say a word. He was the general manager of the Colorado Avalanche. But I had said on television what was true, that his son Eric was playing for the team, and the team had had a players-only meeting, but they wouldn't let Eric in it because they were afraid he would tell his father what went on. And Pierre was absolutely, Pierre had never talked to me again in his life, and shouted at John Davidson, didn't call me, he called John Davidson, said, he's making my wife cry, stop this, stop, you know. And JD came to me, you know, he said, you know, you have to do all this. He said, I'm the one that gets all the phone calls on Monday just because of what you've done to upset people and stuff like that. So, yeah, we did all that. But then when Nancy Lee came in, which was the CBC getting politicized and moving people around, as is so common in Canada these days, because of their gender, not because of their ability, and she got rid of John. And over the years, she also got rid of Blue Jays baseball and the Brier curling and the Olympics and CFL football and on. As I mentioned there in the book, one of the TSN guys said Nancy Lee was the best thing that ever happened to our network.
TSN.
And, Al, do you think John Shannon should be in the Hall of Fame?
Oh, absolutely. Without a doubt. Certainly far ahead of some of those people that they put in there now who did nothing for hockey other than invest in it and make a profit. And look at some of the, you know, they put all these owners in there. What have they done? They've done nothing except cause trouble and in many cases support lockouts and shut the game down and things like that. And then they put them in there simply because they owned a hockey team for a few years. They didn't do anything good for hockey, but John Shannon certainly did. And Don Cherry should be in the Hockey Hall of Fame as well. Don Cherry brought hockey an awful lot of coverage and made it noted by a lot of people. And the fact that you or somebody else or the voters may not agree with him doesn't mean that he didn't have a lot to do with the well-being and benevolence of hockey.
Been saying it on the show for 5 years. 6 years. There's no question. I think it's an I'll just say this. I think it's an embarrassment that John Cherry or John Shannon are not in the Hall of Fame. John Shannon is, I don't know how he's not in the Hall of Fame. Don Cherry, you can disagree with his political opinions, and that's fine. We can all have different political opinions, but he said some things over the years that maybe he shouldn't have said, but to suggest that he hasn't had an influence on hockey that's noteworthy, I think is putting blinkers on. Yeah. John, the relationship between players and journalists, like I loved reading the book because it was almost going back in time. It was like, you know, in some ways I felt like I was reading a period piece of a time that doesn't exist anymore. In some ways, the relationship between journalists and you're a journalist from what I call the old school, and that's a compliment. In the relationship between journalists and players in your day, tell me how that's different than it is today. You guys got to go out and drink beers with players after games. I'm sure players told you all kinds of things in confidence. Yep. When is that relationship changed? I'll just tell me when it changed and how it changed.
probably about 10 years or so ago. There were a number of factors involved, one of which is that Gary has been doing everything he can to break down that communication between players and media because he wants to control totally what goes in there. That was one of the factors. The type of travel change, they used to pretty much all fly commercial planes, and so they would leave the next morning. So that meant they were still in town after the game and therefore available to go to a bar, which of course they did, and enjoy themselves. But now most of them have charter flights, and well, they all have charter flights, and so they'll tend to leave the building within 45 minutes. That's the standard time that's allotted to that, and they're gone. So you can't do it. Also, the advent of cell phones and technology. Once it became evident that a player sitting in a bar having a good time was a target for some lunatic with a cell phone, they had to stop doing it. You sit in the bar, and if you're a player and you're having a good time, as many of them used to, Madison was our bar of choice in those days, and pretty well, I can't think of anybody in hockey who didn't go into Madison at some point after games or whatever, after functions at the Hall of Fame or something like that. And but now you go in there, if you're a player, you don't know that some woman won't come running up and plant a kiss on you, and her partner is sitting there waiting with her phone poised, take a picture, and it's all over the internet around the world within seconds. And now the player, totally innocent, has to try and explain all this and explain to his wife that he was just having a beer with a couple of dingbat journalists. You know, he wasn't with a woman or anything like that. And so, as a result, they don't do that anymore, and then you've got a whole another generation of young players coming in who don't understand necessarily what the media did for them over the years, and it was quite a bit to help support better salaries and that sort of thing, and they just as soon go and sit around and play on their Xbox. They have no interest in talking to media. So there are a whole bunch of factors, but you're right in saying that that world does not exist anymore.
Just to follow up on that, Al, you, I'm sure over the course of time, not just yourself, all the sports journalists of your era developed these relationship with players.
Right.
You may have, I'm sure at some of these sessions, post-game or whatever, after a few, as Don Cherry would say, after a few pops that have been drinking, right, become privy to certain information.
A lot.
How did you or your generation draw the line in terms of this is newsworthy or is it not newsworthy, and can we print it or can we not print it?
Most of the time, because we were experienced, as you say, we knew. We didn't need to ask whether that should or should not go into print. If some guy said, like, our coach is a complete moron, and he also happens to be the general manager, and he's coaching like a general manager, he's trying to make himself look good, et cetera, et cetera. Well, you wouldn't coach the player on that. You might use the information and claim it for yourself, but you knew you weren't going to quote a player on that. If it were something contentious, usually the rule was that if you heard it in a bar, you'd get in touch with the guy again. You wouldn't, unless he had specifically said something, and even if he did, usually if it was a bar, you checked on it. And there were three options. You could either not use it at all, or you could use it but not him the attribution, or you could go ahead and use it and put his name on it and usually check with him and say, which of these three do you want? And if it was you cannot use that, then you still had now some currency in the NHL, because the primary currency in that world was gossip. So you could go to a player on another team and say, hey, did you hear about this? You know, that you were told by somebody who said you couldn't put his name on it or put it in print. And oh, he said, well, that's interesting. Did you hear about this? And now you get something else. So there was a lot that would come out of those discussions, but we always knew pretty well what the player wanted and what they didn't. That's why we were able to entertain them in those circumstances and have those kind of discussions, because they knew us and they trusted us and they knew that we knew what the lines were.
Naz, I'll turn it over to you. Last question. We've got a minute and a half left.
Okay. What was your relationship like with Gary Bettman?
It changed. At first, he tried to co-opt me, but he'd start calling me on a regular basis and trying to tell me what to write. And that didn't work so well. So then there was a degree of animosity, especially when the disruptions of schedule started, because I was very much on the side of the players. I thought they were the ones who made the league go and not the owners. And also, I saw through his salary cap fiasco, which still a lot of people have, and that was never intended to reduce ticket prices, as he said, or make the game available to everybody. It was simply to limit the players' costs, or the owners' costs, rather, and make the owners wealthier, and to make sure that when they did invest in hockey, they could make a lot of money, and Gary would make sure they did that. And, of course, the fans were going to pay the price, but a lot of them didn't see that. So, anyway, there was a degree of animosity there. But over the years, we just sort of learned to respect each other. And there was an instance once where I had uncovered some information that could be really damaging to a general manager. And I said to him, what's your comment on this? And he took me behind a pillar, actually, and we were downstairs in an arena, and he said, you can't use that. And I said, why not? The fact that you know it, and you're investigating this incident, I have to use it. He said, if you use that, you'll ruin that man's life. And it's not true. The fact that we investigated it, and we found out that there was no basis. So if you use the story saying that we did investigate just because we did, that's very unfair to this man. You can't. I said, well, what happens if some dimwit at the other paper finds out in 6 or 8 months after, as they sometimes did? He said, well, if that happens, I promise you that I will be public and I will say that Al Strachan had that story and had more integrity than to use such a story, which has no business being made public. So we had a sort of a deal with each other. We respected each other a little bit. And then later on when I lost my job, and I said, did you get me fired? He said, no.
Al, on that note, unfortunately, I really apologize. I have to interrupt.
Okay.
I went
over the 90 seconds. Sorry about that.
Don't worry about it. It's live radio. You know what it's like. I'm getting buzzed in the ear by the producer. I just want to say thank you. Thank you.
Welcome.
The book is Hockey's Hot Stove, The Untold Stories of the Original Insiders. It's fascinating. It's interesting. It's Al Strachan, the way you remember him. Al, thanks so much for joining us.
All right. Thanks for thinking of me.
Our pleasure. To all our listeners, Naz, thank you. To all our listeners, have a fantastic week.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.